I think we're live, Ed. G'day, mate. How you
doing? Hey, g'day, mate. How you doing, Robbie?
Yeah, really good, really good. Here we are, back to what we were doing before, talking about the madness in the world on the Unspoken Truth here. I'm excited to be doing another live with you for the second time this week. I've got a feeling, got a distinct feeling that we're going to be doing some more of these in the days and weeks ahead, with Israel now telegraphing the fact that they're going to attack Iran. I wanted to jump on here with you and talk about that. We're going to talk about the markets, and we're also going to talk about some crazy cloud seeding in the United Arab Emirates, although that's not a new thing that's been going on. Seems like they've had the worst storms in 70-odd years. Love to peel back the layers of that onion and talk about some conspiracy theories over there. That'll be a little bit of fun. Tell me, what are your thoughts on the Israelis now telegraphing their attack?
It will give me kind of a sense of satisfaction for them to do, to get out there. You know, this part of me says, yeah, man, you want to poke me in the knee? You know, bullies only understand one thing, right? They, you know, until you punch them in the nose, they're going to keep poking you. They're going to poke you and poke you and poke you. And they're going to, you know, and they keep doing it until you stop them, right? So what can I get away with? So part of me wants, yeah, so, but the other part of me, you know, is thinking, well, geez, you know what? I kind of like to be able to get my food at the grocery store. I don't want to, you know.
If you got half a brain in your head, you don't want this, no matter what.
That's right. The potential consequences of this, I mean, it's not like 100 years ago where, you know, you can keep your wars local. Now wars have a way now spreading to your back door, whether you wanted to or not.
So in the bubble that I live in here in Sydney, I got out of bed a bit early this morning, getting ready to go to the beach, making the regular morning picnic with some breakfast cereal and a cup of coffee, right, getting all ready. And as I'm ready and waiting for Susie to come, I kind of just pick up my phone and look at X. And the first post that I see on X is Lord David Cameron. What a joke that actually is. That guy's just an absolute moron. The British Foreign Secretary saying that Israel has called us and said that they're going to attack Iran. And we back him. No, you hold on. Hold up, dude. Hold up. Not a single person in your constituency voted for you to attack Iran. Not one. Because that question was never, ever posed to them. Not one time. Not one time have you ever asked your constituents, should we support Israel attacking Iran? And what it highlighted to me once again is that the democracy that you think you live in is in a complete and total illusion of choice. It's an illusion. Like you think that you have a choice, that if I vote for that guy, then his policies will help me with here. Or if I vote for that lady, this policy will help me here. It's all nonsense. The whole lot of it is nonsense. They just tell you what you want to hear in order to get into the position where they can make whatever decision that they want. And I'm absolutely certain and I'm absolutely convinced that the Australian government will follow suit. And the Australian government will say, yes, we support them retaliating. We think that they should take the heat out of the conversation. We, you know, whatever I think about what they should or shouldn't do actually doesn't matter, because the politicians are going to do whatever they want to do. And when David Cameron goes, points at the camera and goes, and we support them, there's zero consequence to this idiot. And because there's no consequence to this idiot, he'll send the best and brightest of us to war, to our deaths, and there's still no consequence. And even after thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people, maybe even millions of people dying, there's still no consequence to Lord David Cameron. It is just awful. And once again, it highlights to me, not only is there no choice, it's an illusion of choice, but war is an absolute and catastrophic failure of humanity. And what we're witnessing right now, if Israel attack Iran, the Iranians have said, we'll hit you back 100 times harder than what we did the first time. So we now know that there was 300 or something odd weapons fired, munitions fired at the Israelis. If that actually happens, then there's 3,000 odd lots of ordnance fired at Israel from over the horizon from the Iranians. Well, a lot of that's going to get through, because you're going to saturate the air defenses. They don't have 3,000 David slings and 3,000 Arrow 1 and Arrow 2 missiles to shoot down the ballistic missiles that are raining down from space. they're going to take some major, major hits. It's going to be an absolute catastrophe. And what I believe we're witnessing is the complete unraveling of Israel. I don't want Israel to not exist as a state. I don't want Iran not to exist as a state either. But here's the other thing, Ed, and I'd love to get your feedback on this, is they're saying that this is a deterrence play. You can't just launch ballistic missiles on a state-on-state attack and not think that there's going to be a ramification, because if we step out of line as the Israelis again, what are you going to do, fire more ballistic missiles at us? The level of deterrence is not working. So because deterrence is not working, and the Iranians know, they know, their intelligence knows that the Israelis are going to target their nuclear plants. They're going to target their oil refineries. They're going to destroy their navy and all of the missile batteries along the Straits of Hormuz. That's what's going to happen. The Saudis are going to get involved. The UAE, Emiratis are going to get involved. The Bahrainians are going to get involved, because we have to keep the Straits of Hormuz open. So this is going to escalate into a major, major, major conflict, what, much faster than we anticipate. But here's the thing that I want to get your comment on, Ed. They keep talking about taking down these nuclear facilities. All right, let's assume that the Israelis know where they are. Let's assume that we can get, you know, 20 bunker busting bombs inside of one target. Let's just assume for a second that we can do that. Okay, we did it. Now there's a radiological disaster in Iran, like on a scale that we've never seen. Imagine if somebody put 4 2,000-pound JDAMs into Fukushima and blew up all four of those things. Or if the Russian Air Force came along and fired a couple of cruise missiles at Zaporizhia nuclear power plant and destroyed that. Everyone would be like, what the hell are you doing? Stop it. You know, they're firing a couple of artillery rounds and a few drones towards the power plant in Zaporizhia, and everybody's losing their minds. So now we're having a state talking about destroying nuclear facilities. And everyone's like, oh yeah, whatever, man. what do you think about that?
Well, no, that was my exact argument way back. Remember last year it was a big concern that Russia was going to bomb the Zaporizhia power plant. And my argument was, well, that would be...
Oh dear, he's frozen there. Just give it a sec for Ed to come back there. He said, well, the argument that we were talking about, I'll just pick it up there and keep it going there while he reconnects.
Ukraine. And can we back?
Okay. Yeah, we're back there. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. And the prevailing wind in that part of the world is from east to west. So they would have been sending a nuclear cloud over themselves. So that's why my argument back then, well, they're not going to bomb Zaporizhia.
If
anyone's going to bomb it, it's going to be either Ukraine in order to, you know, as a false flag event, or it's going to be the CIA because they want to continue the war. Let me ask you this. Let me throw it back at you, though. Is there a way of destroying that plant without destroying the plant? You know what I mean? Can you destroy the things around it that make it viable without actually hitting the nuclear material? Is there a way of neutering the program without actually hitting the radioactive material?
I think that it's too far gone. Maybe for the last 10 or 12 years, we've been hearing everybody around the world, including the International Atomic Energy Agency, saying that the Iranians are just a couple of weeks away from having a nuclear bomb. There's that famous speech that Netanyahu did at the United Nations where he held up the Acme bomb and said, they're just this close to getting a bomb. We're never going to let that happen. And then at the time, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was the boss of Iran, saying, we're going to wipe you off the map once and for all, and you're a one-bomb country. That was years ago. My view is that they already have nuclear weapons. We saw just the other day that they've definitely got really super sophisticated delivery systems with decoys and the ability to get a nuke on target. So there's, in my mind, there's no doubt that they've already got nukes. And this is the reason that everybody is tiptoeing around everything like this already, because we know the Israelis have got a couple of hundred nukes, maybe 300 or 400 nukes. That's what the estimate actually is. And therefore, the Iranians have got them as well. And by association, the Saudis will have them from the Pakistanis. Yeah. And we suggest and believe in open source intelligence that the Turks might also have them as well. We know that there's nuclear weapons in Turkey. The Americans have got them there. What would stop the Turks from going in there and seizing all of that and making all of that happen? I don't know. The answer is, have they already got nuclear weapons? So trying to blow up their nuclear facilities, will it matter? Probably not if they're already mounted on MRF re-entry vehicles on ballistic missiles that can be deployed on rogue mobile launches that you can't see from space because you don't know when they're launching until they launch, and then it's too late and you've literally only got a couple of minutes to react. So if they launch 50 or 100 or 150 or, like they said, 3,000 of these missiles at you all at once, which one of them's got the nuke on it? Only one of them needs to have a nuke on it. That's the problem. The other thing that we do know is that once upon a time that the Iranian nuclear facilities were above ground, and then in back in the day, the Stuxnet days, where where they got the virus, the Stuxnet virus on the inside of that nuclear power plant, what it did was it caused the enrichment facilities not to work the way that they were supposed to. So what would happen is the uranium enrichment things, the machines, would spin at a rate that wasn't consistent with it actually working. And then on the computer screens, the scientists and the engineers running it thinking that it was all okay, but it wasn't. So it put their nuclear program back by a very, very long time, many, many years. And at that time, they dispersed everything. So everything then went underground. So a la Top Gun Maverick, that whole entire movie is getting you ready for an airstrike against Iranian nuclear facilities. There's only one country on planet Earth that operates F-14 Tomcats. That's Iran. Yeah? And you see Tom Cruise gets in the F-14 Tomcat and runs away. And he's running away from the Su-57s in the fictitious movie, but the Russians didn't give him Su-57s because they don't have enough of them. They gave him MiG-35s. So what, Su-35s, which is, I guess, one step back from that. So that whole movie is getting you ready for actually what's about to happen. But it's not going to happen in the way that you think, because the Israelis have a land attack capability that doesn't require their air force. Everybody thinks that they're going to fly their air force over the top of Iraq and get all the way into Iran and to attack them down there. But where it really matters, and I know this geography pretty well because when I was in the Navy, when we transited through the Straits of Hormuz, there's only really one airbase to the north of the Straits of Hormuz where they could attack you from. And you could see the Iranian Air Force launching from there pretty quickly when they would come out and have a look at the warships that were actually there. So the Straits of Hormuz is not very wide. It's only about 30 miles wide, right, and it's close to the Iranian military, and they've got missile batteries all the way along the coast there. So what's going to happen is, instead of taking out their nuclear facilities, they're going to take away all of their capability to actually launch against the ships, and they're going to take away their capability to actually shut the Straits of Hormuz, and then other navies are going to get in there and go, no, you don't. If the Iranians don't have a capability to actually stop it, then because it's gone away, then it's not really going to be an issue. But they have hundreds and hundreds of fast attack boats, and we've got ways of getting rid of those fast attack boats to stop them shutting the Straits of Hormuz. So my view is, before they go away and destroy nuclear power plants, they're going to have to do that. Because, and this is the calculation that the Israelis have to make. Do we keep the Straits of Hormuz open and dedicate all of our assets to that while we take out their nuclear facilities at the same time? And what are they going to do? Park their submarines right now in the Gulf of Oman and launch land attack missiles at the Iranian nuclear facilities? Even if you could fire 150 TLAMs at them, like that, what are you going to do to a complex that's embedded under a mountain? Well, maybe to your point, Ed, you can destroy all of the infrastructure that's around all of that. But if the Israelis get in there and they do destroy all the infrastructure around it to cut it all off, to destroy the power to it, to destroy all of the roads and everything that goes in there, so the place still exists because we can't destroy it because it's under a mountain, but all of the access to that goes away, what do you think the Iranians are going to do? My view is that they're just going to shrug their shoulders and go, so there's like five of those facilities and you only got one of them. And even if you got one of them, we're still going to launch another 1,000 missiles at you. And the Turks are not going to sit there and take it either. Neither are the Egyptians. Man.
Well, I don't know. I think when you're looking at your list of priorities, all those hundreds, those thousands of conventional missiles that they have, you know, they take a distant second spot to one nuclear weapon, right?
I do.
So let me ask you though, there is a difference between having weapons grade fissionable material than having an actual nuclear weapon, right? I mean, it's one thing to have, yeah, well, we got the uranium there, and if we put it in a missile and we can make a bomb out of it and deliver it, okay, it's as long as it's sitting in a vault somewhere and it's not put on a missile yet, then you just neuter everything around it. So you're telling me that you think they have an actual actionable, workable nuclear missile?
Well, when you look back at the history of how countries try and proliferate with nuclear weapons, the first thing that they generally do is create an atomic bomb. Then the next thing that they'll do is create a hydrogen bomb. Yeah, because that's the super version of that. You all know that if you've seen the Oppenheimer movie or if you've studied history or the Cold War or anything like that. The thermonuclear weapon is far bigger than the atomic weapon. But the Iranians don't really even need a hydrogen bomb to do it with. They could do it with an atomic bomb because the EMP factor would actually shut down all of Israel. And there's been many studies. There's a book on my shelf behind me about the scenarios if Iran fired an EMP weapon at Israel. Where would they do it? Where, there's actually maps, and it's written by Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Rest in peace, Pete. He's got all the maps and shows you where, if they let off the nuke here, here, or here, this is what would happen. And a lot of it spills over into the southern part of Egypt and a little bit of Saudi Arabia. But if they, because they got to be careful of where they let the nuke off for the EMP effect to take, to stomp out all of the lights, because it will destroy Lebanon as well at the same time. So the most likely scenario is down the bottom southeastern corner of Israel. And then that's where it would just, that's where the nuke would go off and make it all happen there. I really believe that they already have nukes. They've, a country will develop atomic bombs, hydrogen bombs, then the delivery systems. And we know that from tracking Pakistan, from tracking India. And we also know that, especially in modern times, from tracking North Korea, because that's what the North Koreans did. And the reason that the DPRK have nuclear weapons is because they see that the United States as the great, they're the bastards, right? The Americans are the bastards, and we're never going to let these bastards back in here. And they see the Japanese as the same as well. And so they created nuclear weapons and a nuclear arsenal as a deterrence. If you think you're going to come back here and do that, we've got these nukes. And then Donald Trump's like, yeah, I've got a bigger, way bigger nuclear button on my desk than yours. Like, shut your mouth, you dickhead, like that. So I wonder what's happening. But, you know, for the last 10, 15 years, the Iranians, everyone has been saying that they're 2 weeks away from getting a bomb. They've got a bomb. Okay. And they've got delivery systems, super sophisticated delivery systems as well.
Well, from what I can tell, listen, I always believe that when somebody tells you they're going to do you harm, it's best to believe them. Okay, and when they're shouting "death to America," death
in America,
in America, it's best to take them at their word, it's part of their mission statement in Iran and by Hamas to eliminate Israel. It is in their mission statement. They want to eliminate Israel.
Oh no, he's frozen again. We're going to have to get Ed a better internet connection. That'll sort itself out in a second. We'll wait for him to come on back in the meantime. Oh, come on, you there? All right, so Ed's talking about everybody shouting death to America whilst they're in America. This is a really, really crazy thing. And if people are saying that, the point Ed is trying to make there is suggesting that we need to believe them. We need to take them at their word when they say they're going to do that. And unfortunately, we're seeing a really, really severe escalation of that actually happening. One of the things that has not been spoken about very much in mainstream media, especially on X, it's maybe spoken about a little bit here and there by some other analysts, but one thing that really concerns me about this massive escalation that's happening, the Russians have said if the United States gets involved in an attack on Iran, then the Russians are also going to attack with the Iranians. So that means if the Iranians are going to fire weapons back at Israel, that also means Russian weapon systems are going to be involved in there as well. And if the Russians are going to attack the Israelis, the Americans have no choice but to be drawn into a wider conflict like that as well. So bringing people into that conflict is something that's not really spoken about. Ed, while you're away there, I'm just kind of saying, sharing my view of the Russians and what they're saying. If the Americans get involved in an attack on Iran, then the Russians will get involved in the attack on Israel, and therefore the war and the conflict will escalate. So one other thing that is not really being spoken about very much as well, because for some reason, the people that are in charge don't understand the second, third, or fourth order effects of their decision-making process. And we've seen in the last 2.5 to 3 years, or since the Biden administration, really, there must be more than 8 to 10 million people that have illegally crossed the border. And many of them are on the terrorist watch list. Many of them are hardened criminals that have been released from jails around the world. And many of them are Hezbollah. We know that. From an unequivocal fact, we know that. And the Customs and Border Protection agents there have stated as much. So if there's an American attack on Iran because American aircraft from aircraft carriers in the region need to go and get rid of those missile batteries to keep the Straits of Hormuz open, there's going to be an attack in the United States. There's going to be a mass casualty event that happens in the United States. But it won't be one. It will be dozens, because these people that are our sworn enemies, that are shouting, as you say, they're chanting in the streets, death to America. In the Iranian parliament, they're chanting death to America. They're not going to make the same mistakes as last time. What they're going to do this time is they're going to make sure that those cells that are in the United States are activated, and those cells go and run riot. There'll be mass casualty events on a scale that you've never seen before, all because these old men, these politicians, these old men think that this is the actual way to solve problems. This is not the way to solve problems. War is a complete and total failure, and it's a catastrophe of humanity. It shouldn't be unfolding like this, but it's about to unfold like this. We've seen a small mass casualty event here in Sydney in the last couple of days because of a crazy person. And then we've seen an actual terrorist attack that the cops said it was a terrorist attack happen here in Sydney. And the day before, there's a couple of people fighting in a shopping center with an axe and a machete. Like, the Australian society is not immune from the craziness of the world. Was it always there, or is it just more available because of social media? I think it's a bit of both, what's actually happening there. But I also think that we don't have an immigration problem like you guys do in the United States here in Australia, and we don't have people that are deliberately and directly crossing into the border to create cells to attack when they're told to attack. There's an entire brigade of Chinese soldiers inside of your borders.
Yep. Yep.
There must be a handful of battalions of Hamas operatives and Iranian operatives inside of your borders.
Handful?
No, a couple of battalions. A couple of thousand people. Yep. That would be, you know, they're sworn to the cause. When you see these people walking across the border, they're military age men, they're officers, they're NCOs, and you can see them wearing all the same clothes, and they're getting across the border easily. They're just walking across the border. They're going, they're setting up their safe houses, they're caching their weapons, and they're making ready to get rid of your power grid. Yeah, they're making ready to create mass casualty on a scale that you could never possibly comprehend. And all of this is deliberately happening because of Joe Biden. Joe Biden's a criminal, man.
Yep. Well, not just him, right? I mean, he's just a face, right? It's these bleeding heart liberals. These bleeding heart liberals are going to get us all killed.
That's what's going to happen to you.
I think more people have died throughout history because of pacifists. Than other people. Look at Chamberlain, World War II. I do believe. Listen, I was watching a documentary last night where they're interviewing one of the men who's the inspiration for this new series called Masters of the Air. Documenting the pilots in World War II, the bombers.
Yes, I've seen it. Yeah,
and they're interviewing this gentleman. He's like 102 years old. And very articulate and very well spoken. He'd done it 25 minutes. He's part of the 100th bombing group, and they had a 77% kill rate. I mean, only
casualty rate.
Casualty rate. And he managed to survive. and he's been on a speaking tour. He said that he is an avid pacifist. He doesn't believe war solves anything. Okay, I respect that gentleman to the nth, you know, but I have to disagree with him on that one. You know, there is a time when you have to fight evil. There is a time, and he went to war to fight evil. That's what World War II was about. If you have a madman who's determined on taking over the world and who's determined to subjugate you, if you have an ideology with that in mind, the last thing you can do is accommodate it. You have to push back, because if you don't, they're going to kill you. And I think that's where we're at right now. I think that's the way I look at this conflict with the Israel and Iran. That it's a ticklish situation, thanks to Obama and his ilk. You know, enabling these people to get so far along in their nuclear. And now here we are, and now it's a much more difficult situation. But something's got to be done. We have to. The longer we don't, you know, neuter these people, the bigger a risk they become. I don't know. So,
tell me what you think here. COVID didn't work. Climate change doesn't work. When all else fails, the economy is collapsing. We're going to take you to nuclear war. And you know, that's a joke, right? That's rhetoric, but here we are.
Yeah, but no, and you know how I feel about that. Absolutely. That's it. There are evil people running this world, and they don't all wear burqas and sandals and live in the Mideast. A lot of them wear nice suits, and they live in Switzerland. You know,
and most of them work for a thing called the Reserve Bank of the United States.
There you go.
That's where most of the evil in the world resides. I would hazard a guess and say 99% of it resides right there, because that's all they care about. You mentioned a word there a couple of times, Ed. I want to pull on that thread. You said a madman, and you're referring to the madman that ran Europe back in the day, Hitler, of course. And you know, you were against that guy. I'll put it to you that maybe Netanyahu's a bit of a madman. What do you think? Oh no, he's frozen. He's frozen in thought there. Now, the reason that I say maybe Netanyahu's a bit of a madman is because he must understand the consequences of what he's about to do. And no matter what anybody says to this guy, no matter oh, he's back. Go ahead.
Well, Netanyahu isn't attacking anyone.
But he is. He's about to attack Iran. Well, and so he's
responding to that. He's doing, I think, what any leader in his position would do. I think he's fully justified.
He started it, man. He bombed Iran in Damascus. He bombed the embassy. Remember,
he did not bomb the embassy. You know, there just happened to be
he bombed the neighbor.
There just happened to be a military installation parked right up against the embassy. That's what these people do. You know,
I saw General David Petraeus say they bombed the annex of the embassy. That's actually a pretty accurate description. You might remember right at the start of the war in Bosnia. I don't know if you can cast your mind that far back into the 1990s. You probably don't remember this. But there was an attack on downtown city somewhere, and the bomb landed fair and square into the Chinese embassy. Remember that?
I do remember that.
Yeah, and the Chinese are like, "Hey, what did we do?" Bad intel, man. That's the reason for that new escalation. Yeah,
fog of war, right? Into the I'm sure. Listen. Israel is a tiny little stamp of a country there, surrounded by everyone who wants to kill them. Everyone around them wants to, you know, these people, I can't imagine living that, like that, where all of your neighbors, everyone's out to kill you. And not just kill you, but they want to eliminate your entire bloodline. They want to wipe out every piece of Jewish blood on earth. You know,
what I find really strange, man, I don't want to eliminate anybody, man. Like, it just seems like strange to me, because it's a failure of humanity, and I've seen war. I've seen combat. I know exactly what the result of it is. But these crazy people, hold on, these crazy people that surround Israel want to destroy them all. And then there's all these crazy people elsewhere in the world that want to destroy them as well without even really knowing any Jewish people. They just stand there and they're shouting some random chant because they're drawn into some ideology that they know nothing about. And then you have all of these gays for Palestine. That proves my point. Dude, they'll throw you off the top of a building if you went there and you said that you were gay. Like, these people are so stupid and tone deaf, they don't realize what it is that they're doing. And the psychological operation, the psyop that's happened around the world has been huge. It's been extensive. And this is going on. Let me bring you back to the question, though, because we're kind of backing and forth and tic-tacking on that a little bit. Is Netanyahu a madman?
I think he's a flawed character, and there are a lot of things I do not like about him. And you know, sometimes you get the imperfect man, you know, to solve a problem. If he's the guy to solve that problem, look, Donald Trump isn't I wouldn't ask him to be a godfather, you know, to my children. but he's a man who gets things done. You know, he's a doer.
If I needed help with a property investment, he's coming.
Right. You know, America, as a president, we should be looking for problem solvers, people who can solve the problem. And the fact that he speaks, you know, kind of awkwardly, and he's had kind of a checkered past in many, and people can pump up their chest and be moralistic and pass judgment on his character and on his personal life. But that has nothing to do with whether or not he gets things done. He gets things done. I think he could go down in history as the world's greatest president, if history is fair, if history you know just goes by the numbers. He gets things done. And so that's what we need in a leader. We need someone who will get it done. And if Netanyahu can keep Israel alive, if he can defend Israel, I can forgive all the other stuff. We can worry.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying I do or I don't like Netanyahu. I'm just posing the question, you know, because you said that it's very hard to see in real time what's actually happening. It's quite difficult to anticipate what could happen. It's very easy to look back with hindsight, but the hardest thing in the world to do is to have foresight. And what I'm thinking and what I'm experiencing at the moment with all of this is these people don't seem to understand the effects of what it is that they're about to do. And I'm not saying that I do either, or I know it any better than what they do. What I am saying is that I've been in that part of the world sitting on a warship, and I know, and on a shitbox warship that can barely defend itself as well, right? Back in the 1990s, for heaven's sake. But I knew that we had the capability to protect ourselves and to defend against the threat there. The Iranian military is not the threat that everybody makes it out to be. Their army is very weak. They don't have that many soldiers in the scheme of things. Their air force is from 1965. Their navy is from 1962. Like, that, they're not a threat to us. We will destroy them. And we will destroy them in the first 3 nights of the war. They'll go away.
As long as they don't have a nuclear weapon.
Well, this is the problem, right? So the Navy, Army, and Air Force are no factor. So they'll go away completely forever, and potentially that topples the Iranian regime because they have no way of protecting their country. And the number one job of every government in the world is to protect its citizens. And if their military is completely destroyed in the first couple of days of a war with Iran, and we've got those plans on the shelf already. We had those plans on the shelf in the 1990s, for heaven's sake. When it's just, how are we going to manipulate this? Where are we going to position the carriers? Where are the B-2s going to strike? Where are the B-52s going to strike? How are we going to do this? So these plans already exist to completely wipe Iran off the map, or wipe their military off the map. But what the plans don't cover is the Iranian missile threat and the Iranian nuclear threat. They have thousands of these weapon systems, and their air defense systems are no factor. If we fire the Israelis, and Western forces, fire 300 rounds of ordnance at them the same way that the Iranians did that to the Israelis, every one of those weapon systems will get through. We've got a stealth capability. That's the first thing. Yeah, we've got JASSM, we've got TLAM, and and we've got ballistic missiles as well. So all of that is going to rain down on every single target in Iran. There's nothing that they can do to stop it. It kind of makes me think, like, yesterday here in Australia, the defense minister came out and said, here's another $50 billion worth of budget. And he has this big long-term forecast going on and all of this stuff that's happening, which I find really interesting. And what's actually happening there is, in the next 3 to 5 years, is nothing. The Australian Defence Force has added another $6 billion worth of something to its budget, which amounts to nothing. Meanwhile, we're watching tanks being destroyed on the battlefield with $2,000 drones in Ukraine. The Australian Defence Force could be destroyed in an afternoon. If the Chinese commenced an attack a la Iran style with ballistic missiles, conventional ones from space, with 300 ballistic missiles, the Australian Defence Force would be destroyed in an afternoon. We've got no capability to defend against it. Iran has no capability to defend against the Israeli, American, and allied strike that's coming its way. So what happens when somebody gets painted into a corner, Ed? What happens? There is, and this is the problem with the bullying thing, right? Iran has bullied Israel. Now Israel is going to go and bully him back, and you're going to bully him all the way into a corner. So the Iranians have said, the Ayatollah said it, if you attack us, we're going to use a weapon that's never been used before. Well, what is it? We've used hypersonic weapons before. So apparently the Russians have got them, even though they're not hypersonic, they're ballistic. They come out like that. It's all bullshit that they're hypersonic. It's not true. And just on my other screen now, as I'm looking at you, I press refresh on X. It says, the commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, Aerospace Force, Brigadier General Ali fucking whoever, stated today that Iran will 100% respond to any kind of retaliatory strike by Israel. Well, and so...
Of course that's what they're going to say.
Of course he's going to say. So here's the problem that we face. We know where every single piece of equipment is on the Iranian battlefield. We know where they are. And we can get at them. This is the difference. What we don't know is where all of their mobile launchers are. And what we don't know is if those mobile launchers have got an EMP weapon on them, or they've actually got a hydrogen bomb, a thermonuclear nuke on them that's going to land on Tel Aviv as a ground burst. We don't know that. And so this is the calculus that these idiots are playing with. So
I don't know.
Is Netanyahu a madman for that? A little bit, yeah. It's a bit crazy, man.
You know, they have that saying in war that every battle plan is useless when the first bullet starts to fly. You know, it's one thing that you cannot anticipate every possible iteration that of a plan. Okay, something happens. You don't know what. Okay, he's going to respond that way. Then this guy's going to come into the war. That guy's going to come into the war.
There's never been a truer statement ever. Let me tell you a quick funny. It's a funny story, right? And it'll drive that point home for you. When we were in Timor, we're in this place in the mountains in the middle of nowhere, right? There's no real bad guys. The bad guys have already all gone. So our job was just to patrol through the villages to hey everybody hide. You know, give out a chocolate bar to a kid or whatever. And just let them know that everything's okay, the baddies have gone. And I remember sitting in this brief, this SMEAC brief is what the Australian Army used, situation, mission, blah, 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 all of this stuff. And okay, Rob, you're going to be the lead scout. All right, cool. And we're going through this brief. And as the lead scout, you turn behind you and the section commander goes that way. And you kind of got to know where you're going to go. You got a compass and sort of know what you're doing. You know where it is. You understand what's happening. But really, if I'm not sure, I just turn around and look and he'll go, go that way a little bit. And we don't talk when we're on patrol, right? He's kind of nudging me that way. Or if we do talk, someone will walk up to me and go, just go left there, right? So we're going to get to the front gate of this compound that we're in. We're going to turn right. We're going to walk down the road and we're going to go, and we're going to do this. So anyway, we go over to the sandbags. I put a magazine in my rifle. I action my rifle. Yeah. I look behind you. Everyone ready? All right, let's go. Let's go in open file formation, either side of the road. Off we go. We're going to go on patrol. I walk out of the gate and they're like, and as I walk out of the gate to turn right, they go, go left. I'm like, I'm literally two steps outside of the gate. And I've been in this briefing for 45 minutes that we're going to go out of the gate, turn right. We're going to go down the hill. We're going to patrol. We're going to go, da, 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 da. And the two steps out of the front gate, they go, now we're going left. What the? I don't even know what's up there. I didn't look at the map. But you're 100% right. You know, and here I am just a digger in an infantry section. How is it possible? How is it possible when the generals are standing there looking at the maps with their hand on their chin, thinking that if we do this, they're going to do that? You don't know that. It's just all fucking
That's bullshit, right, man. That's right. I mean, the best you can do is control what's right in front of you. I mean,
yes, exactly. Right. But then all of a sudden you're just reacting to what's happening in front of you.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And you just have to be a really good reactor. And I guess that's where, I guess you want to have a room full of guys thinking through, well, if that happens, that's what it is, you know, so that you have some kind of, but listen, that's what training is for, right? You know, as a soldier. So when you turned left instead of right, you were prepared for whatever you did come up against. You can, well, if they're right, you always have a, I don't know, plan B, I guess.
I just remember thinking, whatever, man, if you want me to go that way, I'll go that way. Like, I wasn't like rattled by it or anything like that. But I do remember that it's that saying that you mentioned, right? No plan survives first contact with the enemy. I think Mike Tyson framed it right. You know, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. That's where it all comes from, right? And the military adage has that same connotation to it as well. It's kind of funny in that sense.
Well, I think we can all agree that there is already one big loser out of this whole conflict, and that is Zelensky. You know, that poor guy. What happened? Where did everyone go? Hey, I'm over here. I think he's probably feeling a little neglected. However, he shouldn't shed too many tears, because we just authorized another, $50 billion to go to him. So
61 billion, yeah. I don't think that's going to do anything, right? Because all it does is release the stockpile of weapons and ammunition that's actually there, and that money stays within the United States to replenish what we're about to give to them like that. And that's part of the problem that they've got. Even if they get him the munitions that he's requesting and what he needs in the next couple of weeks, I think it's coming to an end faster than what Zelensky would anticipate. You know, and it's funny, we end up in this moral equivalence argument where Zelensky's the only person on planet Earth arguing with moral equivalence. I don't know if you saw Admiral Kirby saying, well, it's a different battlefield. We can't go in there. You know, there's a different threat. There's a different risk. And there's different that. Yeah. And Zelensky's like, well, they're not in NATO. But you went and helped them. You went and did all of that. And the Russians are doing the same thing to us day in and day out. And you're not doing anything. But it shows he's like, see, you can stop it if you want to. But you don't really want to, do you? And the whole point is, no, man, we never wanted to stop it. We always wanted to degrade Ukraine. We always wanted to degrade Russia. And you're the one that has been so stupid sitting in the middle of it all, not realizing that that's what we're doing to you the whole entire time. That was the whole point of it.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the key differences between the Russian-Ukraine war and the Iran-Israel war is that the Ukraine war is an IMF-funded war. You know, it's an IMF-sanctioned war. And so, and we know that's what that war is really about. It's about money. It's not about borders or democracy. It's about money.
Yeah, well, degrading the Russian economy, or attempting to degrade the Russian economy. But yeah. I remember right at the start of the special military operation, Putin came out and said, whatever, man, put all the sanctions in the world that you want on us. Your economy is based on debt. You can't eat money. You need petrol for your car. You need oil for your machines. We're a commodities-based economy, and we will survive no matter what you're doing. And we're actually seeing that play out. We're actually seeing that happen. And we're also still seeing Western countries buy Russian oil. We're still, we're funding the war against ourselves. It's just that complete rubbish.
Now, they'll never say that they're buying Russian oil. They're buying it through some Indian subsidiary. You know, but they're getting that Russian oil. The Russian GDP hasn't budged with all the things we put on. If anything, all we've done is we've driven them further into the arms of China. And the BRICS alliance just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Our people are so inept. You know, our leaders are so inept. You know,
let's talk about that. Let's shift gears into that if we can, Ed, because I want to get, first of all, an update on the markets. But before we go there with that, I want to get an update on what's actually happening in the Congress there. Mayorkas has been impeached. Marjorie Taylor Greene is out there saying, we've got to get rid of the Speaker of the House. Even though they worked really hard to get rid of Kevin McCarthy, now they're trying to get rid of Mike Johnson as well. Like, what's going on, man? This is like complete and total chaos. It's a catastrophe. You know, Mike Johnson came out and said, everything that I do is based on my Christian faith and how I do all of that. And now he seems to be captured by the left, and he seems to be leaning towards everything that the Democrats want. Like, is somebody blackmailing that guy? What's going on, man?
Boy, you just took the words out of my mouth. That's exactly what I was thinking. You know, he was one guy when he walked into that shift to look at some important, you know, secret documents, and he was a different man when he walked out of it.
He seems like a pretty clean skin, though. Like, what is it that he actually, what do they have on this guy that's actually causing him to behave like that? The only thing that I can think of is that the people that put him there, and he was put there, the donations, the donors, the lobbyists, and everything that goes with his appointment to that position, they're the ones that are actually saying to him, well, if you don't do this, you're not going to be there for very much longer. And now Marjorie Taylor Greene is coming out and saying, we've got to get rid of him. There's a bunch of Republicans saying, he's got to go. We've got to stop supporting Ukraine. We've got to fix our border and fix our own problems here. They've all got to go. But that's actually not what's going on in practice, because the puppeteers that are controlling him are saying, you better put this through. You better do that. And the whole thing has come to one person controlling it all. It's ridiculous.
Well, this is why it's fishy, because Johnson got in pretty much because of Matt Gaetz. Matt Gaetz,
he capitulated to it. Yeah.
Right. So he got in on kind of the anti-establishment, you know, theme. And so that's why he was celebrated. But that didn't last very long. So he's just another sellout. In the end, it's one of those, you know, Lucy with the football moments, you know, just kidding.
I remember when he first was put in there as a speaker, I asked you, like, who is this dude? I haven't heard of this guy. And I look at American politics pretty closely as well, just doing what I do on a daily basis. So I've got an opinion about it, and I didn't really know who this guy was. And you're like, well, he's a clean skin. He's pretty neutral and everything. He'll be a good guy for the job. And he was there to begin with. He was. And then that all unraveled quick smart when these really hard decisions came in. And what it does, in my view, it kind of like lifts the veil. We can see behind the curtain how this really goes on, because you saw a really good man that had the best of intentions put into a really powerful position to number three in the government in the United States. There he is. And then all of a sudden, he's captured by the lobbyists that are behind him saying, you better do this, mate, or you're out of here. And we're going to activate our guard dogs over here to get rid of you, because you're not going to do it. We're going to put somebody there that will do it. That's actually what's going on. It's just crazy, man.
Yeah, at the moment, I think he's trying to make everyone happy. And that's a mistake. Yeah, that's not actually what got him in the office. You know,
Just on that, here's the breaking news. Speaker Mike Johnson, we're going to stand for freedom and make sure that Putin does not march through Europe. We're the greatest nation on the planet, and we have to act like it. He confirms Trump supports him and the record-breaking Ukraine funding plan he just introduced for $61 billion is what that's referring to. So now he's like behind it all when he wasn't behind it all. And once again, we're at that point where we're shown that democracy is not really a thing. Because if you ask regular, everyday Americans, do you want to send $61 billion over to fight the war? Like, I think we can all agree that Russia invading Ukraine, that was, don't do that. You can't do that. We all agree that that's bad. That's wrong. We agree with that. Whatever, well, man. What do I give a shit? It's on the other side of planet Earth.
Yeah,
wouldn't you rather that $61 billion fix the homeless, fix the veterans, build a hospital, fix your school? Wouldn't it be better off? That bridge out there has been stuffed for years, man. Why can't we get the government to fix that bridge? That's a federal thing over there. What are you sending all the money over there when you can't even fix that? Well, what about the border? Shouldn't we shut the border? Like, there is no choice. It's an illusion, man. Politics is an illusion.
Well, I think that courtesy of alternative media, you know, like us, you know, who are telling people the unspoken truth, more and more people are starting to get their...
Yes, it's the death of legacy media, for sure. I agree with that. And the reason for that is because people just want an alternative source. They just don't believe what's actually been said to them. That's what it comes down to in the end. It's a really, really sad state of affairs when it comes to that. where you can't trust anything. That's part of the problem that we have as well, is you just don't know what's real. Nobody can agree on what's actually true, because the government has lied to you so much and mainstream media has lied to you so much as well. So part of the problem that we face is, if we can't agree upon what's actually true and what's actually being said is true, then how do we know who to believe? And once upon a time, these government officials were the right people to believe. And once upon a time, these people could be trusted and they did have your best interest at heart. But now they've been controlled by someone else or something else that's going on behind the scenes for whatever reason. And Mike Johnson is the exact example of that. He seemed like a really good dude and the right person to be in place at the beginning. But now he's been captured by the lobbyists, or he's been captured by something else that's going on behind the scenes to cause all sorts of grief for him. So that, in my view, is the illusion of choice. The people that you've elected and the people that you're working with, or you think you're working with, are not really the people that are working for you. So those people that you voted for, they're not really acting in your best interest. They're only going to tell you that they're going to act in your best interest. And the reality on the ground, we see it time and time again. We started off this podcast by saying that Lord David Cameron came out and said that Israel said to the British that they're going to attack, and we support them. But nobody in the British constituency ever supported Britain going to war with Iran ever. They didn't agree to that. Nobody agreed to that. They didn't want that to happen. Nobody wants that to happen, yet they're doing it anyway. And that's because this is an illusion of choice. This is not real. It's not happening. And it's very, very, very frustrating for constituents. And it's very, very annoying for actual people that are on the ground. All right. I'm just waiting for Ed to jump back in, because he's been, his internet connection's given him some real grief today. I just want to share a couple of updates here for you as well. Here's another update here just on X, just a recent one. Israeli Minister of Finance, a member of the Defense Ministry, stated today that Israel's response to Saturday night's attack by Iran should be fierce, severe, and inflict a disproportionate toll, with him further standing that the response will shape the Middle East and that it should rock Tehran so everyone in Iran realizes not to mess with Israel. So these threats and this rhetoric that is coming out of Israel is only escalating. And my fear about this escalation is that it's going to slip out of control really fast and in a way that can't be controlled. Because when you look at the rhetoric like this, what it says to me is that the Israelis are not really calculating or factoring in what Turkey will do, what Lebanon will do, what other countries in the region will do. They're not factoring that in. They think that if they attack Iran directly, only Iran is going to respond. But nothing could be further from the truth, because the Russians have already telegraphed it. And we're covering off that ground again. And I don't want to flog that dead horse. As you were gone there and you left the live call here again, Ed, we've got to get your phone connected, man. I think maybe that's a little bit of a backup we need there for you as well.
Yeah.
I was just kind of talking about the rhetoric there of what the Israelis were saying, man. It's just escalating. And it just, once again, shows us that politics is just the illusion of choice.
I think, they kind of have no choice, I think, Rob. Even if they don't actually end up doing something, I think that's the rhetoric they have to put out there. They have to show their resolve. If they show weakness in the face of this kind of an enemy, the enemy's going to take advantage of that. You know, they're going to see that as a sign of weakness. So I think, if nothing else, just from a PR point of view, just from a rhetoric point of view, they've got to say these things. In the end, they might not end up doing anything. They might end up, a month, a week could go by, and everyone's waiting to see what happens. 2 weeks goes by, a month goes by, and then eventually it falls off the headlines, and then it kind of cools down, on its own. So maybe that's what will end up happening. Maybe they'll just do a whole lot of nothing for a while, and while everyone's kind of waiting to see whether they're going to do something, time will kind of take care of it. Maybe that's what they're going to do. I think I want your opinion. I think from a political point of view, and from a PSYOP point of view with your enemy, the last thing you want to do is show signs of appeasement, showing signs of, okay, well, that's strike number one. You better just don't do it again. I think
there's another red line for you. We imaginary red line.
That's right. Those red lines don't work out well historically. So
this is maybe the mistake. This is the mistake I think they made, man. And this is why this graphic and the name of this podcast, Israel is about to attack Iran. They're telegraphing it. That's the first mistake they're making. This is the beginning of the end. So that's the mistake. They've already made the mistake, and there's no going back. The Iranians have already dispersed everything. We know where their missile batteries are. We know where their air defense systems are. We know where their installations are. All of that is fixed. But what we don't know is where those road mobile missile launches are. So that's the mistake that the Israelis made. While they were being attacked, they should have been striking Iran.
Yes.
It should have been happening all at the same time.
I agree 100%. Here we are, 6 days later, and we should not be talking about whether or not they're going to strike back. They should have struck back within 48 hours or the next day. As soon as
it should have been the same day, in my view.
The same day. Exactly. Immediately. Because the longer it goes on, the more the world gets a chance to change their mind. But when you're in the thick of it, when it's happening right away, everyone's saying, yeah, I kind of get it, man. I kind of get it. But the more people get a chance to think about it, and they talk about it, they debate about it with their friends around the dinner table. you got to do it right away while the world is somewhat behind you and somewhere, not only which, I'm with Trump on this point. Is when I remember a reporter asked him, well, are you going to do this to your enemies? He said, well, I'm not. Why would I tell you that? I'll let you know after it's done. You don't telegraph to your enemy what you're going to do. You just do it.
It reminds me of those idiot Ukrainians with their stupid counterattack that was coming. And the Russians are like, did you hear that they said that they were going to do a – they're getting tanks and shit like that. And then some Russian commander goes, what did you say about a counterattack? Yeah, boss. I saw it on Telegram or some shit like that. They said they were going to do – where? Here. On the southern part of Ukraine. And then the general goes, all right, well, let's get the excavators in. Let's dig in. Yeah? Let's dig in and let's – the Russian way of war – there's a book there on my shelf behind me – shows you how they dig in three deep, yeah, and then three deep behind the three deep, and they show you how they dig in with their defensive positions, and that is exactly what they went and did. They went and dug in because the idiot Ukrainians went, we're going to counterattack against you, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And they do that and say that because what they want to do is to get everybody on their side to go, yeah, go and get them, get some revenge, go and make it all happen. But the reality is when you're over there telegraphing your position like the idiot Iranians did, everyone's ready for you. It's just pitching and catching. Now the Israelis are making exactly the same mistakes the Iranians made, the same mistakes that the Ukrainians are making. Like, what are you doing, man? Just in the code word for it, yeah? The code word in the military is ziplip. Ziplip, be quiet. Ziplip means don't transmit. Don't transmit on your radar, on your electronic warfare, electronic countermeasures. Ziplip, okay, everything. Yeah. Shh.
Yeah, but that's at the soldier's level, But we're talking about the press and media.
Yes, exactly what it is. Yeah,
I mean, in World War II, if you were a reporter and you reported this stuff, you're put in jail. You're up on charges of treason. But now you get retired generals coming on TV and talking. Actually, I find that cool. I like listening to retired generals and get some insight.
But I feel like they skew the argument a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. Well, those pick your general, right? Pick the one you like. But when you have the leadership of a country, when you have the politicians saying, "Yeah, we're going to attack you in a week, and we're going to do this in on Tuesday," what's the point? I think the most effective thing to have done was don't say anything. We haven't gotten a word out of the government now for 4 days, and then and then you attack, and then you hold a post-mortem, press
debrief.
Yeah, that'd be much more impactful.
So here's the last thing I want to say about Israel and Iran, because we're going to have more to say on that in the next couple of days, of course, especially as this unfolds. There's a couple of things that are not going to happen if the Israelis attack Iran. The first thing that we're not going to see is video footage at the same scale and the same level. First of all, Iran is a giant place. It's as big as Western Europe, and it's sparsely populated. And the chances of people actually videotaping what's actually going to happen are very low. And even if they did video it, you're not going to see it uploaded anywhere except for Telegram and maybe X. But you're only going to see what the Israelis want you to see. That's the thing, right? So this is the problem. There's so much scuttlebuck out there right now saying that the half of what the Iranians launched against Israel either didn't launch or failed or crashed before it got time to be intercepted. All right, well, says who? Like, show me the tracking data then. Oh, but you can't show, I can't show you the tracking data because that's all classified. So what, you want me to believe you? So this is the problem that we have in our society, is there's an illusion of choice, but there's also the illusion of truth. What is true to me is not true to you. No one can agree what true actually is. All you want me to take it at face value that half of those missile systems crashed before they actually got anywhere near you, but then you tell me that there's a 99% success rate with the interceptions. So they fired 300 and something rounds at you, but I counted more than 1% landing. Yeah, I counted more than one. I counted more than three landing, because 99% of 300 leaves me with three that landed. But in one video, I saw three hit an airbase, and then I saw a bunch of others hit as well. So which one is it, man? Like, you're not being truthful with me, but you're expecting me to believe you. Now you're going to go and strike Iran, and you want me to believe what it is that you're saying, and you want me to be on your side because they're the great evil, we're the little Satan and the great Satan. Like, what? It's just, this is the problem, man. We're not going to see the footage. We're not going to see the reconnaissance. They're not going to release it. All of it is going to be hearsay. And the problem with the hearsay is the politicians are going to stand behind it all and go, oh, we can't show you any of that because we're going to release our capability. It's the same as MH13 when that thing went missing, when that aeroplane went missing. The Americans can see everything, man. We can see it. We can see SBIRs, space-based infrared, can see the launches, can see the afterburner of an aircraft, can see all sorts of things. And we've got other low Earth orbit systems that can track and see all of this stuff, all of it. Oh, but we can't release it to you because if we release it to you, then you'll know what our capability is. All right, man. So now we're about to go to war and you're taking me to the precipice of nuclear war, but you want me to believe you. But I don't believe you. I don't believe anything. You told me it was safe and effective. And Israel was the world's pincushion. That Netanyahu was the madman that allowed Pfizer to experiment on the entire population. The entire population. If you read his book, he talks about how he actually did it and why he did it. He's a madman in that sense. And now you want to go and go to the edge of a nuclear war and you want me to believe you and the reasons why? I don't believe anything you say. You're a bunch of fucking liars, man.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm a little less interested with details as I am with, you know, actual intent. I mean, the manner in which they retaliate, you know, whether they did 5 bombs, they did 100 bombs, they attacked this or attacked that, is a little less interesting to me than the fact that they actually did retaliate, you know, and then maybe take a look at the degrees. Okay, to what degree did they retaliate? A little bit or a lot? But for me, what's more interesting is whether the actual event actually happens or doesn't happen, and the ramifications, because everything else is detail oriented. It's the small stuff as far as I'm concerned. And I promise you, Wall Street isn't going to concern themselves with, well, did they fire 50 missiles or 300 missiles? All they want to know is that missiles were fired.
What does this do to the market, Ted? Let's shift gears to that, because that's something that we wanted to discuss today as well. If it does end up in an all-out conflict, oil prices, straight away, up they go. What about the gold price, man? Is that going as well? Are you getting yourself into a long position?
Oh, yeah. As much as I can go, I'm needing more into silver. I'm trying to get silver. I think on a percentage basis, I think silver has more upside than gold does. But yeah, if people are not, if they don't have any gold and silver, you got to be kidding me, man. What are you, you joke, a day is going to come here where you're not going to be able to get gold or silver at any price. A day is going to come where you're going to walk into your local coin dealer and say, "Hey, I'd like to buy some gold." Sorry, I don't have any. So I'll put you on my mailing. I'll put you on my mailing list.
Silver is better because it doesn't take as much money to move the price point of silver than compared to gold.
And silver has more of a utility use, right? It's used in manufacturing. Yeah. It's used in the production of stuff. Silver is viewed as kind of the poor man's gold. So the average person is just going to be more in demand. And there's so I think gold is going to explode as well. I'm just saying that from a percentage point of view, I think gold is going to have a more dramatic pump. And in a survival situation, silver is more barterable actually than gold is. So, but you can't go wrong with either one. I mean, it's kind of splitting hairs there.
So what do you think of the actual markets themselves? You know, people, watching, listening to something like this, they're going, "Oh, well, you know, Ed's an expert in that. You've been 30 years on Wall Street. What would you say? Is this a tradable event? Should you anticipate that, or are typically markets not really that fussed by what goes on with that? If anything, markets seem to rally when these things happen.
It depends. There are unique situations, right? In some situations they rally, in other situations, like if there was a military event that put the end to a conflict, for example, then the markets are going to rally on it. But if there's only one thing that the markets hate worse than bad news, and that is uncertainty.
Yeah.
Okay. So, that's what we're in right now. We're in a period right here where no one's quite sure what this is all going to lead to. And
just end up in a ranging market, just moving sideways, right? Because everyone's kind of waiting for a breakout to the upside or a breakout to the downside based on the news of what's going on.
Yeah. Well, I think the best thing you can hope for in here is some sideways action until there's some kind of resolution. That's the best you can hope for. But what's likely to happen is you're going to see sideways to downward moves, the longer this goes on. Now, if the market gets to the point, if the market as a whole, as a collective, makes the decision, it decides, okay, 10% of the teapot, this isn't going to grow into a worldwide conflict. If they come to that conclusion, the market is going to rally pretty big. But that's what has to happen. And how will they come to that conclusion? Well, the market as a collective, I'm kind of thinking like the Borg here, but the market as a collective has a really good way of being right with this kind of thing. It's just the stock market is a really good predictor of things to come. Now, factor in that the markets very recently, and the market has been screaming to the upside now for a long time, largely for the wrong reason, because of Federal Reserve rate policies. Well, we had the CPI numbers come out 2 weeks ago saying that inflation is not going away. Inflation is sticky. So the market sold off on that. And so the market they could use this war as an excuse to sell off. And, we have to, the market's so high. I mean, there's a war. You can't blame us for taking the market. So I think then the market is poised for a potential nasty sell-off. And now might not. It might not. We just have to see kind of what happens. But what Wall Street does not want to see happen is a lot of no news, a lot of if Israel keeps coming out and saying, "Yeah, we're going to retaliate. We're going to retaliate." 2 weeks goes by, 3 weeks go by, a month goes by. We're going to retaliate. Nothing. The market's going to say, "F you, man."
We're just going to go and do what we want to do.
We're going to do what we're going to do. But it's going to be in the back of their mind. So so I think Wall Street, ironically, okay, this is going to sound counterintuitive, but the market, ironically, could rally on an event where an attack by Israel on Iran.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I got to be careful. There's a huge caveat here. Okay, will the market perceive that as a one and done situation? Okay, boom, boom. the way you see it, okay, Iran either cannot retaliate in a meaningful way, or they say some kind of things to bring the temperature down. They say, okay, mission accomplished. Now we can get back to, you know, other things. But if the attack was, let's say they do a big attack and it's a failure. They don't hit their main target. They don't hit the right targets. And you know, and they hit a nuclear site and radioactivity goes into the air. If it turns into a mess, if it's perceived by Wall Street to be another Pandora's box being opened up, yeah, then you can see a very nasty sell-off. So not all military conflicts are created equally. Context is very important. But the worst thing that could happen is that the market is that we're in a period of uncertainty for a long period of time, and the market just bleeds lower, bleeds lower, bleeds lower. So
I love your analysis, Ed. It's really important, you know, and people should take heed of what you're saying. It's not financial advice, of course, but it's just an analysis and a viewpoint from 30 years of experience. One thing that I do know that you've been right about since we kicked off this unspoken truth thing a long time ago now, a couple of years that we've been having these conversations, you and I, we've known each other. We've been talking about get your money out of the banks, get some gold and silver, and make sure you create streams of passive recurring income. They're the three things. That's the mantra that we believe that you should live by. And it's been right. So the debanking continues. Banks continue to close. ATMs continue to go away. Cash continues to leave our society. There's a video going around X that's got a couple hundred million views of a fella going into the bank somewhere in the UK, I can't remember where it was, asking for some money. And the woman's just asking him a series of questions and says, no, you can't take your money out of the bank. No, you need to show us an invoice. And he's like, but I pay cash. And it's legit. Like, I can't get it. Well, I want to speak to the, you need to speak to the manager. No, I'm speaking to you. Like, and what are you going to do? Still say no to me? So you can't get your own cash out of the bank. And the other thing that we've been talking about for a long time now is to get some gold and silver only to preserve your wealth. But what about the gold price? Oh my God. When we started doing this, I look back at the time when we started doing this, gold was like nudging around 1900 bucks. And here we are nudging 2400 bucks. What the hell? You know how much money that takes to be poured into that to actually move the gold price $1? The size of the gold market is staggering, man. It's like $15 trillion or something like that with a T. I can't remember exactly what it is, somewhere in that vicinity. But in order for the price to move just a couple of dollars up or down, there's like hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars into it, billions of dollars moving the price like this. So when the gold price has rallied the way that it actually has, that says that governments are getting involved and governments are buying. And the supply is all being bought up. That's why the price has been driven up. And the only institutions around the world that have the capacity to do that are governments. So if governments are stockpiling gold for whatever reason, then that says something about the economy. That's telling as well. Because in times of massive uncertainty, people move towards wealth preservation. You can't preserve your wealth in a property. You just can't, because you're subjected to too many market forces. You can't preserve your wealth in the stock market in a company either, because those companies are subjected to market forces. The only thing that you can preserve your wealth in is in gold or silver. But is that actually relative to the dollar that you're actually buying it in at the time? Yes, it is. So if I preserve $100 worth of gold today, will it still be worth $100 in 2 years, 10 years time? Well, that depends on the actual value of the dollar. That's the first thing. And it depends on the value of gold. That $100 might be worth more or it might be worth less, depending on the gold price, supply and demand, and the dollar amount as well. So it's very telling about the actual price of gold, because the only institutions able to move the price as much as it has, what's it moved, 22% or something like that in the last couple of months? It's just incredible, man, how much that's actually happened. It's huge.
Yeah, well, remember, fiat currencies they fall under the purview of the central banks, right? That's their job, is to oversee their fiat currencies. And central bankers, they've been the primary buyer of gold for several years now. And it's been accelerating this past year. China being the biggest buyer, and Poland actually, I think, is like the second largest buyer of gold, you know, interestingly enough. But when you have central banks who are the people responsible for protecting their local fiat currency, buying gold, that tells you everything you need to know about what they think about their own currency.
They're preserving the value of their currency there in that as well. I mean,
if they don't like their own currency, why should you like it? You know,
that's the irony of it all.
You know, every, you know, so a few fun facts here, right? Unfun facts. Paper is worthless. Your fiat currencies have no intrinsic value. They're literally made up of, they're made out of thin air. And
yeah, if the world goes to hell in a handbasket and you try and transact with a dollar bill, people are just going to get pissed off, man. Like, no.
Yeah. Fiat currencies have a 100% failure rate. Every fiat currency that has ever existed throughout mankind's history has failed. Every single one. The US dollar someday is going to go away. I don't know when it's going to go away, but it's already being diminished as a world reserve currency, thanks courtesy a lot to the BRICS coalition, but also courtesy of our own freaking Federal Reserve with their policy. They're printing money. Inflation is not caused by market forces, my friends. Inflation is caused by one source, the government. The government is the cause of inflation.
Okay? Too much money printing.
So money printing is what causes inflation. Your butter, your eggs, your steak did not go up in value. The value of your dollar went down in value. Okay, so that's the way you have to look at it. And the inflation's grand target is to get inflation down to only 2%. So that way your buying power is only going to be decreased by 2% a year. That's their grand, that's what their grand objective is, just to limit your loss of buying power to 2%.
Well, the problem is they print so much money and give it all to their mates, and now they have to pay back the interest on it. And we now know that there's countries out there borrowing money to pay the interest back on it. So there's a state here in Australia called Victoria. And yesterday it came out that the Victorian government, because Dan Andrews was so incompetent, the previous premier who locked Victorians in their homes for 2 years, he was so incompetent and mismanaged the economy so badly that the Victorian government has to borrow money to pay back the interest on the loans that they actually have. So how long do you think that that's going to last before the entire economy collapses? You can't use one credit card to pay off the other one. That's just exactly what the government are doing. And that's the result of complete and total mismanagement. Note, once again, the illusion of choice. Nobody in Victoria voted for the Premier of Victoria to go and borrow money to actually pay off the interest. But that's the decision that they had to make. And they would sit there all day long at a press conference and say, we have to make hard decisions about how to manage the economy. Bullshit, you do. Nobody said that. You actually have to fix the wrongs of the past and to make that happen. All right. Let's shift gears to the final part of today's show. Ed, you wanted to talk about cloud seeding, which is something that I know a little bit about as an aviator and as a pilot. And I knew some people here in Australia. A guy I knew a while ago, it was in probably 2007, 2008, around that time frame. He was an ex-F-111 fighter pilot here in Australia, and he left the RAAF and he started his own business. And what he was doing, he had a King Air 200, and he was doing cloud seeding in Western Queensland. And I remember asking him about it and learning about what it is. And they put these flares on the wings of aeroplanes with silver iodine in it. And what they do is they wait for a specific type of weather condition to actually happen. And because of all of the instruments and barometers and everything they can do, they fly the aeroplane into the updraft. And as the updraft, so the sun is heating the ground and the air is heating up as it moves up, it reaches the point in the atmosphere where it reaches its dew point. So that at the dew point temperature, that's where clouds form. So when you go outside and you look at a cloudy day and you see the cloud base there, that's where the dew point is, because the atmosphere can't hold any more moisture and therefore it condenses into clouds. And what they do is they fly below that layer. It's pretty cool how they work it all out with the science and the mathematics of it. And they fly the plane, they light the flares, and they have silver iodine. And the silver iodine gets trapped into the updraft, and the particles can then catch onto the silver iodine, and they make bigger and bigger clouds. And they obviously turn them into rain clouds, because you want it to rain where it's not raining. And so there's been some cloud seeding projects that have happened in the UAE. And that happens in, believe it or not, just not just the UAE, but it happens in all parts of the world. And it's technology that's existed for a long time. Is it weather modification? Yeah, I suppose it is. You're trying to modify the weather. You're trying to make it a bigger cloud to make it rain. But can you do it at a scale that causes a once in a 70-year event like what we saw in Dubai in the last couple of days and over down a little bit further to the south in Oman as well? My view is no. I call bullshit on all of that. Maybe you can do it from a localized perspective and you can see the clouds locally to make it rain locally. But can you do it at the scale of what we've seen in those storms in Dubai? No, I don't think so. What do you think? Some of the footage is pretty crazy, what we've been seeing, huh?
Yeah, it is. Well, my question is to all of you climate change activists out there. How do you feel about all this tampering with Mother Nature and everything? You know, and I mean, the world has spent, Mother Earth has spent billions of years creating a very intricate, you know, climate system. And we're kind of fucking around with the very delicate nature of weather. I don't know. So I don't know if it's, this is one thing I wanted to ask you. Is this a case where the local farmer, you know, just like local farmers hire crop dusters to crop their field? Is this, do farmers out there in the middle of Australia where it's a desert, do they hire seeders to come out and create rain for their specific crop in their little area there? Or I mean, can you control it that locally?
Well, the fellow that I knew when he was doing that, it was localized, and I think they were doing a lot of studies with the government, trying to figure out how to make it work. But we've known how to make this work for a very long time already. And we know that it can actually work, and we know that it can be localized. Can you, if you live on a farm in the middle of nowhere, can you ring the government and go, hey, can you come and do some cloud seeding for me? No, I don't think so, man. I don't think that that's how it works. I think the government look at the, well, you know, they've spent millions of dollars in a department of meteorology, and they're saying, here's a good idea. Here's where these conditions consistently happen, where you have the updrafts happening like that. You have the cold air that's coming over the top. It creates these cumulus clouds or these cumulus nimbus clouds. If we get underneath that and do some cloud seeding, maybe we can help it rain a little bit more. Well, so there wouldn't be very many places that you could actually do it to be meaningful.
Well, can a local entrepreneur just do it, or do they have to get permission? Do they have to get permit to do it?
I'm pretty certain, I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty certain that you would have to have all sorts of permissions to be able to do something like that. You're not allowed just to go fly around. Well, you know, everybody that believes in chemtrails would go, well, they'd fly around with those.
Okay,
and the pilots don't know about that. Well, I don't know, man. It's like a very contentious topic, isn't it?
That is actually the half of the of this topic that I really want to talk about. This making rain stuff. Oh, it's fucking rain. Who cares? And silver oxide is actually not a dangerous chemical, right?
Silver iodine, it is.
Iodine, yeah, it's not. But it's the chemtrail crap that's going on, you know. And London is famous for all sorts of videos on YouTube out there in London. For some reason, they point their cameras up and see these chemtrails. And people say, "What the hell is all of that?" And then it's coming out. And the more they keep it secret, the more people are wondering about it. These governments, our governments, are spraying crap into the air without telling us about it. And that's what I want to.
I don't know if it's real or not, Ed. I don't know. Something's going on. That's a fair statement, isn't it?
This conspiracy theory is gaining legs, right? It's gaining momentum. More and more people are talking about it. More and more people, and you don't hear the government denying it. You don't see anyone denying it, and that's what's really kind of alarming. You would think the government's it's coming out saying, "No, we're not putting." So I think this is yet another version of the government experimenting on us without letting us know. and I would like to know if anyone in the audience out there, if you know what these chemicals are, could you put a comment in and let us know what is the story there? Because so far, from what I can find, is no one knows.
There's a documentary on it on the real Alex Jones on his X channel, and it's from a long time ago, man. It's, I don't know, it must be 15 years old. And he really delves into that and shows you exactly what it is. You just got to be careful with watching those things, because what happened, it's like watching the TV show Ancient Aliens. Like, you watch the TV show and like 1 minute into it, you're like, this is just bullshit, man. But 10 minutes into it, you're like, well, maybe that's actually half an hour into it. You're like, aliens have been here the whole time. And it's the same sorts of things with these. Like, you can bias yourself towards something. So I think it's really important that you watch it and you just take an objective view of it and you say, well, maybe that could be true. I don't know if that's, there's no way that I can verify what those people are saying. There's no way to verify what all of these conspiracy climate change theorists are saying. But what if it actually was true. There is some element of truth behind it, but that's where a really good lie works really well, is when they contain elements of the truth to get you to believe something in a certain way, meaning something was safe and effective. It would stop you from getting sick. It would stop and limit the amount of illness that you would have. There was some elements of truth in there, but in reality, we know different. In reality, the truth was very different indeed. I don't think there's a cloud seeding operation in the UAE that caused yesterday or the day before's storms or the weather like that. I really believe that what actually happened was a once in a 70-year storm that caused all sorts of chaos. And if you look back through the history of weather on the peninsula in that part of the world, I'm certain that you could easily find weather events that were similar to that. In the last couple of weeks here in Sydney, we've had weather events that would be categorized as a category one or a category two cyclone. But what we don't call them down this part of Australia, we don't call them cyclones. We just call them East Coast lows. And every year there's an East Coast low that develops off the coast of Australia there like that, that brings winds that are of the scale of a category one or a category two cyclone. But nobody names it. It's just an East Coast low. Whatever, man. Is that weather modification when that happens? No, it's just a regular weather event. I've been in East Coast lows here where they've been like category three winds of a cyclone. You know, the wind's blowing like at 150 kilometers an hour. Like, what the hell? This is like a cyclone. Literally is, but it's not a cyclone. It's an East Coast low. Is it weather modification? No, you fucking idiot. It's just the weather. If you learn, most people that talk about climate change, most people that tell you, just stop oil, all of these green libtard zealots have no idea how clouds are even formed. They wouldn't even be able to explain to you what dew point temperature is or what the standard deviation temperature, how many degrees does the temperature lower every 1,000 feet? They wouldn't even be able to tell you that stuff. It's high school science that they can't remember, that they don't know, but they want you to believe in a climate change model. There was a Senate estimate here in Australia just a couple of weeks ago where one of the senators asked the question, what model are you basing all of this climate change stuff on? And he said, well, there's 40 different models. Well, which part of which model and how is this all working? Doesn't work. None of it's true. It's all complete nonsense. No, all of it's nonsense.
It is. And one last message to all of you climate activists out there, just so you know, I'm going to have one big, fat, juicy steak for dinner tonight.
Yes, I'm with you. There it is. I'm going to have that for lunch today.
And no bugs, just one big, fat, juicy steak.
Just beef. All right, Ed, let's get out of here. We'll see you next time, everyone. Bye for now.
Thanks, Robbie.
See you, mate.